Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and we're starting the show today by talking about the state of aquaculture in our country. We can talk about it sort of worldwide, and we can zero in on Wisconsin as well. One of our guests, Johns Hopkins University professor Dave Love. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be here.
With us as well, UW-Stevens Point Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility Assistant Director, Tyler Furkus. Tyler, great to have you along as well.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
As we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. Do you wonder where the fish you had last Friday night at the fish fry, where that came from? Maybe you avoid eating some fish or seafood, perhaps, because you don't know its origin. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Dave, here in Wisconsin, we have a Friday night fish fry. And if you go to California or Florida and say, hey, where's your Friday night fish fry? They're going to look at you like you're nuts, which I have done. And they have looked at me like I was nuts. Do you have that in Baltimore, Maryland?
No, we don't, actually. that's a nice tradition to add, though.
I think it's a great tradition. And I tell you what, I love the name of your center, a Center for a Livable Future. Maybe tell us about your work at that center.
Sure. It's Center for a Livable Future is within the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. And we focus on looking at the food system from farms or fisheries all the way through to the consumer, thinking about how we can make it better from an environmental standpoint, from a worker standpoint, and from a consumer health standpoint.
So you've done a lot of research in the aquaculture industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Tyler, let's turn to you for a minute. Tell us about the UW-Stevens Point Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility. It's in Red Cliff, so it's away from the Stevens Point campus.
Yeah, we're located about 4 hours north of the Stevens Point campus up here in Red Cliff. But we're a part of the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point campus, of course. And it's a really unique facility that focuses on research to support the aquaculture industry. We also have a mandate to focus on demonstration of different aquaculture systems and new technologies. So we focus a lot on informing fish farmers within the state about new practices or different techniques that can improve efficiency for raising fish in Wisconsin. So we have quite a broad mandate. We also do a lot of tours to the public where we're improving education about aquaculture and fish in general. So it's a fun place to work.
It sounds like it. And I looked at the site, and it's a really nice website that you've got there with a broad range of things going on. Dave, let me go back to you, Dave Love. A new UN Food and Agriculture Organization report found that in 2022, more fish were farmed worldwide, than were harvested from the wild, possibly for the first time. What's your response to that report?
Well, this is something this is a slow-moving trend, not a big surprise. But it is a monumental moment. You think about food that we get from terrestrial ecosystems. When was the last time you got, caught a wild animal, and ate it? In fisheries, this happens every day. But in terrestrial systems, we've been farming, chickens, pigs, cows, goats for thousands of years. So the fact that we're finally flipping from farming more fish than we catch in the wild is a historic moment.
Think it's a good thing?
Yes, I think we need fish farming, and not just fish, but we've also farmed crustaceans like shrimp, mollusks like oysters, clams, mussels. A lot of seaweed is farmed. Yeah, we need a mix of farmed and wild caught. And there's a lot of interesting trends going on here. Farming's going up in most parts of the world, but our fisheries are either landings are either flat or going down, and that's concerning.
And do we know why it's going down?
Yeah. Back in the 90s, the U.S. and other countries around the world instituted better governance around fisheries. And some of those governance practices have limited the catch of certain species because we don't want to have overfishing. And we've all seen what happened to the cod fishery in the 90s off Georgia's banks. And we don't want that to repeat that in other U.S. fisheries. Mainly in Europe and North America, our fisheries are either flat or trending down while being sustainably managed. In other parts of the world, in parts of Africa and Oceania, we're seeing still increased yield from fisheries. And that might be an indication of unsustainable fish harvesting. This is from wild capture fisheries. And then if we look to aquaculture, it's a really interesting series of trends. Most of the aquaculture or farmed fish raised in the world come from Asia. And within Asia, most come from China. The rest of the world, you know, Europe, Latin America, North America, Africa, is not doing a lot of fish farming. So it's mainly Asia that's leading this global trend towards more farmed fish.
Why would that be? Why Asia?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, part of it is cultural, you know, what people like to eat. Certainly there are many countries in Asia where seafood is an important part of the diet. I'm thinking about, for example, you know, Bangladesh, coastal India, Vietnam. Fish and seafood is a big part of the diet. Of course, in China, it's a big part of the diet. And we've also got growing populations. And so these are all important trends to keep in mind. I think when you look at the U.S., you know, we're the 19th, if you rank the U.S. aquaculture production relative to global global aquaculture. So we're pretty low on the list. We used to be, we still are an aquaculture innovator. A lot of technology comes from the U.S. Hatcheries, the idea about raising fish in hatcheries, that all came from a lot of work in the U.S. About a century ago. But I think there's a lot of reticence about aquaculture in the U.S. because of environmental pollution.
Yeah. Tyler, maybe you can talk about your demonstration facility, how it's making farm fish available to consumers in the U.S.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the work that we do at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility is focused on developing techniques and doing research that helps inform both the Wisconsin aquaculture industry and the aquaculture industry nationally. So we're conducting a lot of the research that kind of helps drive some of that innovation that Dave and you were talking about. So sometimes that looks like finding new techniques to improve broodstock production for food fish production. Or sometimes it looks like doing studies on testing new feed development to see if it's suitable for the species that we raise in Wisconsin or nationally. It's really important to have a facility like this that can do that kind of research, because if you're a private fish farmer or a fish company, you don't want to dedicate some of your production facilities to doing this type of research because your livelihood is relying on that. So having a facility that can kind of do that research without relying on a private company to take some of their fishery space out of production is really important. So we do that research, and then we try to transfer our findings to the aquaculture industry to help improve efficiency or sustainable production going forward. So
I would like to ask you both from your own perspectives, each of your perspectives, and maybe Dave, I'll start with you. What does a modern aquaculture system look like?
Yeah, that could be a lot of different things. Well, we know that we farm aquatic animals and plants in freshwater or seawater, or even estuarine water, which is a mixture. They're, you know, farmed in lakes, ponds, rivers, in the ocean, in tanks. And I think really what, when I look at aquaculture, I think about the intensity of production, you know, number of animals per liter of water. Is it a system that is fed daily, or is it called an extensive system where the animals just eat from whatever's in the pond, you know, from the wild? So there's a whole range of different types of aquaculture, you know, from high tech to low tech, depending upon the setting.
Yeah, I would think so. Tyler, what does it look like in Wisconsin?
Yeah, in Wisconsin specifically, we also have a very diverse mix of different types of aquaculture systems. So the fish farms that have been around for a long time are mostly flow-through systems that have raceways that have kind of water in and water out. And they're usually based around springs or small streams, raising rainbow trout. There's also a lot of fish farms that are focused on pond production. So ponds that maybe walleye or yellow perch are stocked in and raised out. Most of the time, those are for stocking fish into our lakes and streams for recreational angling purposes or conservation purposes. But more and more, as we go forward, aquaculture facilities are starting to be done intensively, where fish are raised completely indoors in either aquaponic systems, where fish culture is coupled with plant growth, or in recirculating aquaculture systems, which are designed so that up to 95% of the water in the system is actually reused. So it really minimizes the water footprint for the fish that are being raised. And that's kind of being billed as the future of aquaculture, especially in the Midwest, where we're focused heavily on inland aquaculture. We don't have net pen aquaculture, where there's a large pen in the open ocean or in a lake here in Wisconsin. So we're all inland based.
And there are a lot of registered, I think there's like 2,000 registered fish farms in the state.
Yeah, and that number does fluctuate every now and then, but we do have a very robust aquaculture industry in Wisconsin. So we sell, I believe, more than $14 million worth of fish food products or seafood products annually that are grown in Wisconsin. And Wisconsin's actually the number one producer in the Midwest in terms of sales of aquaculture products. Despite being number one in the Midwest, I think we're around 20th nationwide. So even though Wisconsin's got a pretty robust aquaculture industry, it's relatively small compared to some of those coastal states that have net pen aquaculture. So, and access to the oceans.
Yeah, we don't have access to oceans. We've got the Great Lakes, but we don't have access to the oceans. Dave Love, a research professor at the Center of a Livable Future, and Tyler Furkus, our guest today, assistant director of UW Stevens Point's Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility in Red Cliff, our guest today talking fish farming. You can join in 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here talking about how fish are raised and harvested. And I'm hoping you'll join in with your questions. What do you want to know about raising fish for food consumption or maybe stocking lakes and streams, even aquariums? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Tyler, I want to go back to you for just a minute because I was thinking about the walleye that I had to eat last Friday night for dinner. And I wonder if that was from an aquaculture system or wild caught. It's probably likely from an aquaculture system. And you're doing some research on walleye.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up, Larry. Actually, most of the walleye that you're going to be purchasing in a grocery store or even at your Friday Fish Fries are most likely imported from Canada from wild fish fisheries. So there's actually no surprise to you, probably quite a demand for walleye in Wisconsin and Minnesota and other Midwestern states. But yeah, we're getting most of that walleye as imports from Canada. So because there's that demand, there's a lot of impetus to figure out how to raise walleye in an aquaculture setting. So we've been doing a lot of work to try to develop walleye as a aquaculture species that's suitable to be raised in indoor systems here in Wisconsin. So pretty hard to figure that out for any new species. And walleye certainly has some specific challenges, but we've made a lot of headway on raising walleye. And we're now at the point where there's three different private fish farms focusing on raising walleye here in Wisconsin. So it's exciting to see.
It is. And I'm just thinking about the, just as an aside, the drop in walleye production seemingly in wild, in lakes across Wisconsin where bass have seemed to take over from walleye.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a concern. And it's possible that in the future, aquaculture production of walleye can kind of help make up that gap and reduce the pressure on wild fisheries from the commercial fishing operations, at least in Canada. There's a small domestic commercial fishing operation in the U.S., but yeah, it would be great to be able to supplement that with aquaculture production of walleye.
And Dave, back to you. It's an interesting thing. I was reading some of the what you've written and talked about, and there isn't a clear line between farmed and wild-caught fish. What are some commercial fish production practices that blur that line? Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, happy to. Also, just to go back to this walleye.
Yeah.
I went and pulled some of the statistics from Great Lakes fish, the Great Lakes fishery, and Great Lakes in the U.S. produces $5.9 million a year of fish. A lot of that is walleye. So there is a pretty big fishery in the Great Lakes that really I don't think it's, you know, it's consumed locally. I don't see it down here in Maryland. That's about 1% of U.S. production. Just to throw that out there.
Yeah, thanks.
That's a lot of tribal fishing, commercial fishing rights for tribes. So Larry, you mentioned this issue about blurring the lines. What's farmed? What's wild? Well, we know that we have hatcheries all over the U.S. that produce for recreational or sport fishing, you know, whether it's trout or other species. And that's really important for the recreational market. But we also have hatcheries that produce for the commercial market. For example, up in Alaska, pink salmon is a good example. Maybe 30-40% of the pink salmon out of some tributaries in Alaska start their life off in a hatchery. And that's that hatchery technology and all the innovation that goes into that is really important. There's of course, some debate about whether we should have that many hatchery raised fish out there in the wild, what that means for fish genetics. But yeah, that's one issue. Another kind of crossing of these lines between fisheries and aquaculture is that most carnivorous species that are raised in aquaculture, for example, salmon, they do eat some fish, and that's in the form of fish meal and fish oil, which are small wild-caught fish, anchovies, sardines, and those are caught, they're crushed and pressed in, and the oil's extracted, and it's turned into a meal. That'll also make its way into pet food. A dog or cat food might have fish meal in it, but the vast majority of that fish meal is going into aquaculture. And so we're raising a lot of carnivorous species that eat a lot of fish, which is a net loss of seafood from the world. Yeah.
And the pink salmon raised in hatcheries, if they're fed, mature, released, and then caught again, they're referred to as wild caught.
Yeah, yeah. Same with lobster. The American lobster comes out of Maine. Those traps are more like hotel rooms. They're filled with bait. Lobsters come in, they snack a little bit, they might leave, they might come back. So a lot of the weight that a lobster puts on comes from bait. And a couple of years ago, there was a bait crisis in Maine. They ran out of bait. And that would really hurt the lobster industry. So people were quite upset about not having enough bait.
Let's. You mentioned salmon, and Jeff and Merrill has something relating, a question relating to salmon. Let's go there. Jeff, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, Larry, thanks for taking my call here this morning. It's not so much a question, but especially talking about salmon. I had the opportunity to tour a place in the Coulee region over near La Crosse. It's called Superior Fresh, and it is a fascinating place. They raise salmon indoors. The water that comes in for the salmon, everybody knows what salmon do when they eat, and then they have to recycle that food into the water. Well, that water then gets pumped into another building in the same place, which goes to where they raise lettuce, spring mix that we get in the store all the time, the lettuces, the leaf lettuces, the spinach. So all that water that comes in to raise the fish then goes in to raise your salad. And I find the place fascinating. I grew up as a kid hanging around a trout farm in northern Wisconsin near Mountain. And I could always taste the difference in the trout because of the pellets that they were fed in the ponds, as opposed to the taste of a wild trout. The beautiful thing about these salmon being raised at Superior Fresh, whatever they're feeding them, it's the best tasting salmon you will ever have. You don't get that pellet flavor like so many, farm-raised catfish and trouts have. It's absolutely delicious. I recommend it highly. And anybody that has a chance to look into that, called Superior Fresh, it's in the Coulee region near La Crosse. It's fascinating. It's wonderful. And I love your program.
Thanks, Jeff. Well, you guys are both nodding. Tyler, turn to you first and then to Dave. Go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that we actually have the largest aquaponics facility in the world right here in Wisconsin, and that is Superior Fresh, located in Hixton. So they're a pretty impressive facility that's doing a lot of really innovative and neat things raising Atlantic salmon right here in Wisconsin. So it's really exciting to see, and really great that we have the largest aquaponics facility in the world. Right out our back door.
Yeah, that's cool. Dave, a comment?
Yeah, just shaking my head. The chief scientific officer, Steve Sommerfeld, is a good friend of mine. I was in Wisconsin a couple years ago. He invited me up to tour Superior Fresh, and it is really amazing what they're doing. And he's come after and spoken for my class, and yeah, I think it's really innovative. Growing salmon inland in tanks, I think, is the future of how to raise salmon. Because you can capture the waste. So the big problem with raising salmon in net pens in the ocean, any of the uneaten feed, and all the waste settles out, and it settles out onto the bottom. It creates this scum, dead zone at the bottom. So farms rely on siting in high flow, high energy environments. What I mean by high flow is the water moves through very quickly through the net pen, and that'll wash the waste out. You know, it might wash it out, but that waste it still exists, and there's still a lot of nitrogen and phosphorus, and that pollutes waterways, leads to eutrophication, which we hear about as dead zones. And the Gulf of Mexico is a big dead zone. From over nutrient runoff from the Midwest, but that's crop agriculture. Mm-hmm. So we really need to think about transitioning these net pens onto land so we can control the waste.
Interesting. Ellie in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Hi. I am a major fish nerd, and I also work in animal health in my day job, so this is a really interesting conversation. I was wondering how fish farmers and aquaculture farmers in Wisconsin are taking into account the emergence of fish disease, especially with like climate change, and thinking about whirling disease up north that's kind of making an appearance now here in Wisconsin. Just wanted to know what your guests thought about that.
Whirling disease. Well, comments start with you, Tyler.
Yeah, certainly. So in Wisconsin, the disease is certainly an issue, as it is everywhere. But we have Wisconsin DATCAP, or the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And they help set and enforce testing requirements to prevent some of that disease transmission. So in the state of Wisconsin, anytime fish are being moved, they need to be disease tested. And there's really a lot of safeguards in place to kind of prevent farm-to-farm transmission of disease. That said, it's you know, impossible to prevent all diseases. So it really comes down to each individual fish farmer to follow best practices at their farm to make sure that disease issues don't crop up. And that involves regularly monitoring your fish, making sure to keep everything very clean, and just following SOPs that involve some of those best practices to prevent disease issues. So,
Dave, a comment from you.
Yeah, just generally, disease is a huge problem in fish farming. It's probably the number one challenge for fish farmers. And I've raised tilapia in a greenhouse, and you know, they say you're not a true fish farmer till you killed a lot of fish. Fish, you know, the big fish diseases, they'll wipe out a whole farm, and it's really concerning. There are vaccines for a lot of diseases, and where they're not vaccines, there's also antibiotics, and that's one of the concerns that consumers have is being exposed to either antibiotic residues in the fish or antibiotic resistant bacteria or superbugs that might be on farm fish. And so these are, you know, I think these are real concerns. There are a lot of the countries that export to the U.S. are doing a better job at controlling antibiotic use, but it's still a big issue. And it's one in which we need to be using, transition away from antibiotics and more to these sort of animal husbandry practices globally, you know, to control antibiotic use.
Yeah. Tyler, were you going to add something there?
Yeah, and one thing that's important to mention too is that the way we raise fish here in Wisconsin, most of the time they're not exposed to the open oceans where, you know, there's a really big need for consistent antibiotic application. So when we have recirculating systems or aquaponic systems, we can control that environment a lot more closely, and that really reduces the reliance on that. So it's less of an issue for Wisconsin-raised fish than it might be for imported fish or fish raised in a marine environment.
Yeah. Elliot mentioned the whirling disease in fish. Were you familiar with it?
Yeah, whirling disease is a disease that you see crop up in salmonids, particularly rainbow trout. And it was a really big issue out west, but it has popped up here and there further east and is a potential concern for aquaculture species in Wisconsin. So it's something to be keeping an eye on, but it's one of the things that DATCAP requires testing for before fish are moved from fish farm to fish farm. So ideally they have a good handle on where it exists in the state and have strategies out there to prevent its spread.
A caller who couldn't stay with us wanted to know if there is community-supported aquaculture like there is for other locally produced food.
Yeah, that's a great question. One that's a really, really neat operation that I want to highlight is Forest County Potawatomi has a really neat aquaponics facility that really goes a long ways for tribal food sovereignty. So that's a really neat one that I want to highlight right here in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Dave, are you familiar with any?
Yeah, I can point your viewers and listeners to the Local Catch Network, which if you Google www.localcatch.org, and then you can click on a button and find your local seafood. And that would include, community supported operations and other local fish farms and also fisheries. And so I wouldn't be surprised if there are many in Wisconsin, because this is a really popular way to get local food these days.
Does fish farming, here's another question from a listener. Does fish farming reduce the amount of mercury and other heavy metals in the fish we eat?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the benefits of aquaculture is that we can really have a good idea of what the fish are eating specifically. Where wild caught fish, we don't really know what they've been eating, and we don't have that control over what they've been eating. So the FDA actually tests fish feeds to ensure that they're free of contaminants. And also they prohibit the use of growth hormones. They're testing for that as well. So we really have a good handle of what those fish are eating and what they're exposed to. And we can be mostly confident that farm-raised fish in most applications are free of, PCBs or methylmercury.
And what about the nutritional value of, say, aquaculture fish versus one that you caught on a hook and line? Is there any research on that? Do you know, Dave?
Yeah, I've looked into it, and our group has written about this. I think the variety that you see in nutrients really is based on the species, not whether it's farmed or wild. So there's such a wide range of different nutrients, mussels, clams, oysters, very rich in minerals. When you're thinking about fin fish, oily fish are going to be higher in omega-3 fatty acids, and those are heart promoting, oils. Shrimp is actually pretty low in omega-3 fatty acids and low in a lot of nutrients. So I would shrimp a little bit lower nutritionally. But it's good to get a variety of seafood, and the U.S. government recommends 2 meals a week is kind of the target to shoot for. 90% of Americans don't meet that. But that's not that surprising. 90% of Americans also don't eat the fruit and vegetable recommendations either. We have diets that need to change to be healthier. But seafood is an excellent source of nutrients. The big challenge for consumers is price. It's one of the most expensive proteins in the grocery store, if not the most expensive protein. So affordability is a big issue.
Talking about commercial fish farming and fish research with our two guests today, Johns Hopkins University Professor Dave Love and UW-Stevens Point's Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility Assistant Director Tyler Furkus. Give us a call with your thoughts. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're talking about modern aquaculture practices with our two guests today. What are your thoughts on the journey fish take to reach our dinner tables? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. You mentioned, Dave, that it's as a protein source, it's kind of an expensive protein source compared to other things that we might eat. I'm wondering about the cost of farmed versus wild fish. Do we have any, and maybe have you both comment on it, but do we have any data on that?
Yeah. Both Farm and Wild come in a range of different prices. You know, you've got your luxury high-end farm fish, and you also have low-end, you know, pretty cheap frozen whitefish, frozen tilapia. Any price point you want, it's there. But generally, fish is a little bit of a frame shift up in price compared to chicken, for example.
Yeah.
Tyler, I'm curious, do you guys sell to local markets? What kind of price do you guys set?
Because we're a research facility, we don't sell the fish products. We occasionally will partner with local fish farmers, though, and help donate fish that we've started raising here for them to sell. But it really depends on the species. It is important to note, though, that the economics or the high cost of raising fish domestically is a really big part of what's slowing the growth of domestic aquaculture. So the U.S. imports 70 to 85% of its seafood products, according to NOAA, and very few or a very small makeup of the total seafood consumed in the U.S. actually comes from domestic aquaculture. And yet the cost of production is a really big part of that issue. And we talked earlier in the show about how kind of the future of aquaculture is recirculating systems or indoor aquaponics systems. And while they're great and they have a lot of benefits, they are some of the more expensive ways to raise fish. So as we go forward, we have to kind of find efficiencies within the current way that we're raising fish in those types of systems for domestic aquaculture production to really expand. And that expansion is really important too. Because we import so much of our seafood products, it really hampers the potential environmental benefits that we can have by consuming more seafood products. Because fish protein is relatively low as far as greenhouse gas emissions go compared to other forms of protein. So if we can rely more on fish, that's part of the solution. But if we have to be importing these fish from overseas, that kind of negates some of the benefit that we can get. So really kind of shortening those supply chains and growing more of our fish locally is a really important part of having aquaculture be part of a climate solution.
Are we keeping up, or are the fish farms keeping up with the growing appetite for fish worldwide?
The answer to that is yes and more. So, you know, if you plot a graph of population growth and then plot on top of it the rate of seafood production, you know, fisheries and aquaculture, we're producing more than we need. So, yes, the short answer to that is we're definitely producing enough. Again, just to remind listeners, we're also seeing a drop in commercial wild capture fish production. So we're offsetting that with more, even more aquaculture.
Yeah, I got to believe that, you know, just going out and netting wild fish is pretty expensive and environmentally not much better than raising it in an aquaculture system.
Yeah, like all things, it kind of depends. It depends on the type of species targeted, depends on the commercial fishing operation, depends on the aquaculture operation. So there's really a wide spectrum across all of fisheries and aquaculture on those costs and efficiency. So it's really hard to compare apples to apples, right?
Yeah. We've done a little look at carbon footprints within the U.S. In the U.S. seafood supply, domestic wild-caught salmon and domestic wild-caught Alaska puck shake out as two of the lowest carbon footprints. And that's, you know, I think that wild-caught fisheries do often have lower, especially if they're catching a lot of fish at once. You know, think about salmon that are returning all at once and pollock that are schooling fish that can be caught all at once. That's, you know, going pot to pot, cat to for lobster, that's a high carbon footprint. Farmed Atlantic salmon is is low, but it does have a high footprint when you ship it fresh by airplane. And 90% of the salmon, the farm salmon that comes into the U.S., it comes on an airplane.
Yeah.
It's taking a seat, but it's underneath the belly of the plane. And consumers want fresh seafood, you know. If we were more interested in frozen and thawing it at home, that would reduce food waste and it would reduce the carbon footprint from transport. So consumers have a lot of choice in the matter in what they buy and what product form, fresh, frozen, canned. So I'd encourage consumers to think about that when they're shopping. It can be overwhelming because there's lots of species out there. But there are a lot of good options within seafood.
Somebody else was wondering about shrimp. I'm thinking a few years, not that long ago, there was a lot of concern raised about the shrimp and how the shrimp were being raised, Dave, and just sort of ethical and actually ethically in terms of the shrimp, but also in terms of the final product that the consumer was getting. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think, some of the concerns around shrimp, that shrimp farming destroyed mangroves, and coastal ecosystems, that's an issue that dates back from the 80s and 90s. And I think a lot of that is under control, but those damaged mangroves still exist. There's a workforce, mainly in South and Southeast Asia, probably not paid what it should. There's a lot of risks in farming for the workers. There can be antibiotic use, as I mentioned. And now and again, products that enter the U.S. or Europe from other countries do get flagged for food safety concerns. There are also issues around wild-caught shrimp, a term called bycatch, which is that when you're targeting one species and you catch another by mistake, and the shrimp fisheries have a lot of bycatch, almost one-to-one, a pound of shrimp, a pound of bycatch in some cases. So, there are issues on both sides, farmed and aquaculture, around shrimp that we need to pay attention to.
Yeah. So what happens to those byfish?
The bycatch gets tossed overboard. Yeah. And that's really unsettling to hear. There's not often is there a market for what they're catching.
Charles in Wausau has something for us. Charles, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, Larry. Great fan of the show. So over in the Eau Claire area, there's a guy that takes a big swimming pool in his barn, fills it with Instant Ocean, and raises shrimp in it. And he sells that shrimp at the Eau Claire Farmers Market, and it's huge and delicious. And I was just wondering if your guests could talk a little bit more about, like, small-scale producing your own fish.
Yeah. Tyler?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the Wisconsin aquaculture industry is pretty small scale, with a few exceptions. You have your Superior Freshes that are very large, but by and large, most fish farms in the state are pretty small operations, which is really neat. And it's honestly great to be able to go visit some of your local fish farms and purchase the products that they have there. It's really neat to be able to see how they're raised. And get your seafood products locally and avoid those supply chain issues and having to worry about if the fish that you're purchasing came here by airplane, right? So that's one of the great things about being in a state like Wisconsin that has a pretty robust but very kind of locally based aquaculture industry.
Yeah. Go ahead. You were going to add something here, Dave.
Oh, well, I think you can farm fish in any size container. We bring 200-gallon, 300-gallon tanks into classrooms and do it in schools. The kids love it. We usually stock with tilapia. It's pretty forgiving. The main thing is, put a water heater in, and the kids need to feed the fish once a week, not a couple times a week, not too much, but you can farm fish. You can do it.
By the way, what was the original name of tilapia? That was a public relations thing. I think it had an awful name. Do you guys remember?
I can't put us on the spot like this, Larry. I don't know.
It had just a terrible name, and they switched the name from that to tilapia, and suddenly sales of tilapia jumped.
Yeah. There's another fish, Pangasius. It's a type of catfish. It's raised in Southeast Asia. It's one of the top imports into the U.S., but you won't see Pangasius on any restaurant menu. You'll see catfish, but it's probably Pangasius. I mean, outside of the Southeast, where there is a lot of U.S. farm catfish.
Oh, man. Jonathan had emailed to say they love eating fish, lived in Japan for several years and met people who didn't really consider fish meat. And Jonathan realized in our culture as well, fish is a meat alternative with connections to the Catholic tradition of Fish Fry Fridays, as we've been talking about. Can you speak to people thinking that fish is a meat alternative?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people are trying to transition away from red and processed meat for health reasons. It's high in saturated fat. There's a lot of risks around eating red meat and processed meat. And so from a health standpoint, fish is a great alternative, as are, you know, beans, legumes, peas, so from that standpoint, yes. Tyler mentioned the carbon footprint. So, if you put protein foods on a scale, you know, beef is off the charts high in carbon footprint. After that, pigs. After that, chickens. Now, fish is actually a seafood is a bit of a range. You know, it ranges from pigs to chicken or below. And it really depends on the farming or fishing practice. But the average, the average fish probably is around the carbon footprint of an average of raising chickens. And then below chickens, you know, you've got your plant-based proteins. So, I think people are looking for alternatives to red meat, and seafood is one of them.
You know what, Jill Nadeau just reminded me, I mentioned tilapia in a different name, but actually the original name of orange roughy was, they called them slime heads. And they changed the name of slime head to orange roughy. She's right. They changed it to orange roughy, and sales of orange roughy shot through the roof.
That really highlights how important marketing is. It's probably why we don't have a robust crappie aquaculture industry, right? Hard to market that, even though if you're from here and fish, you know they're great fish. But
caught a lot of crappies in my day and enjoyed them all. And I would, if I had too many, I'd throw them in a milk carton, fill it with water, and freeze the fillets. And they would always taste fresh if it's done that way. Dave, Tyler, thank you so much for being with us today. It's a real pleasure talking with you about the aquaculture industry. I hope we can do it again. But in the meantime, thanks you very much. Dave Love, research professor at the Center for a Livable Future at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore, Maryland. Tyler Firkus is assistant director of UW Stevens Point Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility in Red Cliff. Coming up, we're going to take a look at some water trails, not hiking trails, but water trails. I'm Larry Mueller.